I put it to you, Marshbanks, you Rogered my wife. The charge is that you, Thomas Margery Banks, feloniously and unlawfully did Roger Lady Margaret Truscott. What day exactly? What squalid night? What furtive afternoon? Or was it immediately after breakfast, when I had caught the 8:15 up to Temple Station and the Law Courts? Did you dive in, Margery, and take her warm in her housecoat while she was watering in the conservatory? And what was your excuse for invading my property? Half a dozen eggs. I remember the nasty habit you had of keeping fowl. That was your war work, wasn't it? Boiling kitchen scraps for a run of bedraggled and malicious birds. Thomas Margery Banks, V.C., violated chickens. A man not to be trusted with anything warm and feathered. What sort of sentence would that carry, I wonder? Unlawful intercourse with the wife of a high court judge, a judge of the utmost seniority. What sort of sentence would that attract? Death is the least sentence I could pass, having given due weight to all mitigating circumstances.
What are you doing?
Arriving at some sort of judgment.
Sitting under the old mulberry and dozing. That's what you've been doing. You'll have to bestir yourself soon.
I'm perfectly capable of bestirring myself when I wish, thank you.
Edwin will be here directly. Your son will be here before very long. We're going to lay on a decent spread for Edwin. Have you seen to the wine?
Of course I've seen to the wine. Half a dozen bottles up from the cellar. He's been waiting there for Edwin for most of his life. Patience has made the claret, quite remarkable.
The colchicums are all out. The autumn crocus.
What?
The autumn crocus, Ben. The naked ladies.
Naked ladies? Who calls them that?
Tom does. Tom always calls them naked ladies.
Tom Wood. Tom Margery Banks. So it all adds up.
Adds up to what?
Small pieces of evidence, all circumstantial. Taken as a whole, they provide a pretty formidable case.
No need to think of cases, dear. Now that you're retired.
You think I can shrug off the responsibility of judgment with the Scarlet and Ermine? I'm sitting here in mufti, I know, under the mulberry. But I still have to reach a decision.
We'll soon be having to take in the geraniums.
What have the geraniums got to do with it?
The weather's bright enough now, but it's deceptive. I'll soon be taking them into the conservatory.
Why on earth?
To save them being nipped by an early frost.
Don't mollycoddle them. Anyway, that's a job for Catamole.
Catamole's got his work cut out. He's weeding the cabbages. Anyway, Catamole's not as young as he used to be.
Don't keep a dog and bark yourself.
The hibiscus came too late. Our soil's not rich enough.
We keep Catamole as a jobbing gardener. And you choose to pot your own geraniums. Anyway, you mollycoddle those geraniums. Why can't they stand out in the frost and be nipped like the rest of humanity?
Because they're not at all like the rest of humanity.
Oh, really? What's so different about them, then?
They're geraniums.
Now, where are you going?
Oh, just time to water things before I get the lunch laid.
Don't go.
Only into the conservatory.
Isn't that rather asking for trouble?
What did you say?
Typical of a woman. They do rather ask for trouble.
What did you say, Fenimore?
Nothing. I said absolutely nothing. Members of the jury, we now come to the details of this rather sordid story, one that will be painful to you, I've no doubt. It is some considerable time ago now since Lady Margaret Truscott, a woman a good deal younger than she is today, took the unwise step of going, alone and unprotected, into her husband's conservatory for the perfectly proper purpose of watering pot plants. Members of the jury, you will see that there are two entrances to the conservatory, one leading out to the garden, the other into the hall of the matrimonial home, Gallows Corner near Drachem in the county of Kent. The view from outside the conservatory is somewhat obscured by the greenish haze and deposits of algae upon the glass, and by the extensive fronds of those pampered plants, which are apparently too delicate to rough it down the border with the hardy perennials. This makes the conservatory an ideal place for private illegality. An intent observer, seated beneath the old mulberry tree on the lawn, might have seen, however, through the greenish mist, a second figure invade the glasshouse from the hall entrance and position itself unnaturally close to Lady Truscott. Unfortunately, you, members of the jury, were not seated beneath that tree on that particular morning. Had you been, I do not think you would have been in any doubt as to the identity of the marauder. Clearly, it was none other than the accused, the man, Thomas Margery Banks.
Wake up, then. Tom's here. He's dozing again. Dozing under the mulberry. Put the sherry down there, Tom, won't you?
Time hangs heavy on his hands now, I expect.
Well, there's so little for a retired judge to do. He's lost without his trial. Of course, he still manages to try things whenever he can. Most of the week, he's been trying haversack for burying his bone in the rose bed.
What was the verdict?
Not reached. Fenn likes to drag these things out as long as possible. Oh, and he prepared an indictment against a wasp, which kept landing on his toast and marmalade when he had breakfast out here.
He'd try anything.
You're right, Archbanks. I'd try any kind of pest that exceeds its rights.
Surely a wasp has a right to the garden, Fenimore.
Every right includes a duty.
What's the duty of a wasp?
Not to dabble its feet in my bloody marmalade.
God created wasps, dear. They're entitled to settle.
That's a typical do-gooder's point of view. My wife's a red, Marshbanks. I hope you appreciate that.
It must be a hard life for you, Fenimore, without any real criminals.
Real criminals? Oh, I can still find plenty of them.
We're not usually here when the autumn crocus is out. We're usually in Dieppe, the three of us.
I don't like that hotel in Dieppe anymore. Not since they put music in the lift.
Well, we could always find another hotel.
Typical Red, my wife. She wants change all the time.
I missed our holiday this year, all the same.
Can't say I missed seeing you fumble for your francs in slow motion every time l'addition was presented.
What have you two been up to?
Oh, we were arguing about geraniums. Fenn thinks I mollycoddle them.
What do you favour for geraniums, Fenimore? Borstal training? The short, sharp shock?
A little cold weather does no one any harm. I say, Marshbanks, we've not asked you to luncheon, have we?
Of course you have. Today's the great day, isn't it? The return of the prodigal. What did I smell coming through the house? Fatted calf?
Come through the house, did you?
Tom helped me carry out the sherry.
Oh. And what else did he help you do?
Nothing else.
Shall I pour you a glass, old fellow?
Old? I like that old coming from you.
Here, Margaret.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're all three old, then. No need to rub it in.
Consider my client's age, my lad. Is he to die in prison? Why is your client so particular about where he dies?
Well, here's to Edwin.
My boy, Edwin.
Fatted calf for Edwin. That's what I smelled coming through the house.
Not fatted calf. A trifle of roast duck, applesauce, a Lugenberry pie, swimming in cream. He chose that for his last supper before going back to school, one half, I remember. Edwin, I said to Lloyd, if you make such wise decisions throughout your life, you will grow to be a great and good man.
And has he, do you think?
Has he what?
Grown to be a great and good man.
We are soon to find out.
If Edwin's happy, that's all we care about.
Margaret, being a bloody red, I mean, would say that.
Oh, I agree with Maggie.
Maggie?
Well, Margaret. What have we to strive for but the greatest happiness of the greatest number?
The simple-minded creed of a fellow who makes crockery.
Now, you really cannot describe Tom, whose glazed pottery is shown in art galleries, as a fellow who makes crockery.
Crockery or pottery, I don't know what's the difference. Anyway, what's the use of your artistic pots? Anyone ever served up a decent stew in one?
Anyone ever served up a decent stew in one of your legal opinions?
Well done, Tom. Awfully good shot.
It wasn't well done at all. I hope you don't think the judicial function can be compared in any shape or form to spinning a bit of mud around and cooking it into a vague evocation of a peasant chamber pot which can usefully hold dead bulrushes in a Hampstead bedsitter. Neither has the art of judgment any connection with hand-weaving, petit point, or the making of stamped leather covers for the telephone directory.
Well, at least no one gets sent to prison by a peasant chamber pot.
Exactly. Have you noticed the tide's gone down in this sherry glass?
Do the honors, Tom. I should have liked Edwin to have followed an artistic career. At one time, I thought he had a future with a pencil.
He has a far better future than that.
In the world of business?
Margaret can't stand business. At the time of my boy's birth, she was a pillar of the local Fabians. You bicycled with them, didn't you, Margaret?
Bicycling was over years ago. We used to go on rambles, though, and summer schools to Dartington Hall.
A couple of those revolutionary rambles, and she thought she was going to give birth to Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. What a bit of luck that Edwin didn't take after his mother. He found all those socialists in knickerbockers extremely embarrassing.
I have never even seen anybody in knickerbockers. Never in my life.
My boy was always on the side of authority. At his prep school, Edwin was a monitor.
I always felt Edwin was too sensitive to be a monitor.
A monitor at Boglands on the Norfolk coast. At Boggers, he kept some sort of law and order in an extremely primitive society. He was a firm but just man. At the age of 10, as I remember it.
He wasn't a monitor at his big school, anyway.
His big school? What's this language of the nursery? Lawnhurst. It was founded by an Elizabethan clothier. A school cold-bathed through Victorian England as a harsh nursery for archbishops and governors of New South Wales. Edwin's big school. Biggies and big jobs.
Edwin was never a monitor at Lawnhurst.
Was he not? Well, I don't entirely remember. Can I trouble you for another drop of my Amontillado?
I remember.
What, Marshbanks? What do you remember?
I remember Edwin wrote to me from Lawnhurst. He said he'd join the Madrigal Society.
Madrigal Society?
He said he used to go brass rubbing in the local churches on a bicycle. It got him out of the football.
Brass rubbing? Or he was having you on?
Oh, no. He showed me his rubbings. And some of his watercolours were quite decorative. He'd hang them on the walls of his study.
I never saw any such thing.
Perhaps he used to take them down when you came to visit Fenimore.
All I saw in his study was a photograph of the football team.
Put up, probably, just to please you.
Why did he write to you, anyway?
What?
Why did he write letters to you from Launhurst?
A sort of honorary uncle.
Oh, a relation?
Not really, a family friend.
A friend or relation?
Just a friend.
No blood relation. It's wishful thinking, Marshbanks. I don't believe Edwin wrote to you at all. You had no issue, did you?
What?
No fruit of your loins. No part of you whatever to thrust forth into the future. You will die, and there'll be nothing left of you, except a few impractical china objects and your old tweed jacket swinging on a coat hanger. That is, until they pack it up and give it to Oxfam.
My dear Fenimore, do you claim immortality?
Edwin will carry on a certain tradition. He is carrying on certain standards. But they're keeping him busy out in Canada, apparently. Edwin's not afraid of work. Well, the boy's letters were always scrappy.
Not at all.
What?
I said not at all. His letters from school to me were always long.
Long letters to you? Oh, yes. What about it?
About the leaves falling, about the wind, breaking into poetry sometimes.
You live in a world of fantasy. Any good?
What?
Edwin's poetry.
And clouds. I believe it was about clouds, that sort of thing.
No bloody good, then.
Huh? Don't you be so sure, Fenn.
What?
Don't you be so sure they weren't good. Edwin had a sensitive ear for verse.
A sensitive ear? Oh, I can't say I ever noticed. You hear that whistle, the members of the jury? It may be an important piece of the evidence. What are you whistling, Marshbanks, exactly?
He always whistles that.
Always?
He whistled it, I remember, during air raids.
The war years.
Such a happy time, the war years. The summers were so marvellous.
I know, and you could have lunch at the Savoy and change left over from a 10-bob note.
And yes. Tom kept chickens, do you remember, Tom? He used to bring us eggs. Tom kept chickens, and I was pregnant with Edwin.
You were pregnant with our boy, and Tom used to come round whistling. Oh, for heaven's sake, there must be other tunes in the world. You used to whistle like a grocer's boy bringing round eggs. Edwin didn't write to you from Canada.
No, in Canada, Edwin became strangely silent.
Well, you know what boys are.
Boys?
When they get a bit of independence for the first time, when they go out to the colonies, run wild for a few years. You get the edges knocked off them. Well, it's only to be expected.
You think Edwin's been running wild?
Wouldn't surprise me in the least. Oh, I don't mean anything sinister. I don't mean anything seriously immoral. But it wouldn't surprise me if he hadn't been, well, log cabining out in the Rockies or somewhere.
His letters to me are all from Global Computers.
Computers? Oh, yeah, yes, of course. Well, I expect that's just what he tells his mother. Log cabining, I dare say, something of that nature. He's written to you then, Margaret?
Occasionally.
You didn't tell me?
I think I'll go and look at the duck. See if the oven needs turning up.
Why didn't you show me the letters, madam?
She's gone, Fenimore. Maggie's gone into the house.
Madam, I demand an answer to my question. The witness has certainly something to hide. You might think, members of the jury, But a father would be interested above all things in a letter from his son, his own flesh and blood. That is, of course, if he is my own flesh and blood. Oh, the presumption of legitimate birth is strong. Nothing is stronger.
She's marvelous, old Maggie.
Marvelous? Is that your view of Margaret?
I mean, she's a marvelous wife. Your Margaret.
My Margaret. You fancy her, don't you? It is, of course, members of the jury, a vital question.
Oh, enormous, then.
Is the accused suffering from ridiculous overconfidence? Or is the guilt so great that he sees no alternative to an admission?
Of course I fancy her, always did, since the first day you brought her here.
Bringing her here, that was my mistake. To Gallows Corner, where the next-door neighbour was a lecherous potter. A fellow with nothing better to do than spin shit-coloured crocks for holding spills in front of gas fires in Welwyn Garden City and leer through conservatory windows at the other fellow's wife.
I remember the first day you brought her here, after your old father died.
The house was empty. We were picnicking in a dusty kitchen. Gallows Corner seemed an appropriate sort of name, seeing that I had just been made up to a High Court judge. A fellow who then had it in his power to order, in extreme cases, of course, a good topping.
She came over to borrow a little milk.
Well, she was always forgetful.
She wore a blue linen dress, as I remember it. No stocking and plimsolls.
She dressed like a revolutionary. A judge's wife wearing plimsolls like a bloody communist.
Her auburn hair was tied back with a ribbon. That was what struck me so forcibly.
Auburn hair?
Oh, surely the colour of her hair.
Grey is what I would call it. Entirely grey.
But then it was auburn, surely.
I would have described it as copper-coloured and held back with a tortoiseshell comb. I thought she was a long time borrowing the milk.
What are you getting at?
I am getting at the heart of this extremely distressing case.
The heart?
Later, some years later, a person pleading guilty, I left court early. And, as an unremembered robber started on his 10 years of close confinement, I began my sentence of suspicion.
Sometimes, my dear Fenimore, you talk like a bad detective story.
I crossed the lawn and stood facing the conservatory. I heard that damn perky little tune you still indulge in.
Egelida manina, se la lasci riscalda, cheka che giova.
The windows of the conservatory were misted. I saw nothing but shapes.
Ma per fortuna è notte de luna, e qui la luna l'abbiamo vicina.
What were the two shadows on the greenish grass? A woman and a watering can merely, or two creatures of opposite sexes, unlawfully intermingled. I stood watching a long time. Then, to give you fair warning, I scrunched my foot on the gravel. And when I opened the conservatory door...
What did you see?
My much troubled wife.
And?
No one else.
There now, nothing to worry about.
The bird had flown.
I was never there.
You'd fled. A very clear indication of guilt.
If I was never there, I couldn't have fled.
If you were never there, you couldn't have been whistling that damned tune.
Perhaps Maggie whistled it.
My wife is not musical, as far as I know.
You may not know very far. Your wife is particularly addicted to the operas of Giacomo Puccini.
She never listens to music.
She never listens, Fenn, because she's afraid music would arouse in her romantic longings which you are quite unable to fulfill.
So, do you?
What?
You, Marshbanks, do you fulfill them?
What is the question exactly?
The question is, members of the jury, has the accused Rogered my wife? Have you Rogered her?
Hadn't you better ask her that?
It's not the sort of question one asks a lady.
Anyway, why bring it up today, after all these years?
Isn't this just the day to bring it up? Edwin's coming to lunch.
I see. Oh, I do see. Oh, dear me. Brass rubbings and watercolours.
Yes.
Poor old Fenn. You didn't care for the idea of Edwin writing to me about brass rubbings.
I must confess I found the evidence disturbing.
You didn't care for it at all.
It comes from an unreliable source, that is to say, the mouth of the accused. But it is disturbing evidence, all the same.
What are you afraid of, Fenimore? That I'll take your immortality off you?
What are you talking about?
Your claim on the years to come. A line of Truscott stretching out into the future, passing judgment, condemning, locking people up, endlessly censorious, endlessly frightened of what their wives may be getting up to in the conservatory. The Truscotts of Gallows Corner.
Rather a better stock, wouldn't you say, than the Marshbanks of Craft Cottage, the Potters of Folkweave Farm, the old fellows with moist blue eyes and spotted bow ties, the ones whose war effort was whistling and keeping chickens. That line is coming to an abrupt end with you, Marshbanks. There will be no fruit of the loins you keep concealed in those filthy old corduroy bags.
Is that your considered opinion?
What?
Is that your final judgment on the matter?
Is there anything more you would wish to say? Mute of malice, are you?
Is there anything more you would wish me to say?
I am not fishing for information.
Oh, yes, you are. You both just such a tough nut to crack, but you're frightened. Admitted, Fenimore, scared to death of what you might discover.
Scared of what?
Edwin.
My son.
Your son, with artistic leanings. Your son, who wrote to me regularly from Lawnhurst. Your son, who's kept quiet all these years. Doing what, exactly? Throwing pots, perhaps? Using his fingers, light on the clay, a touch like velvet, to achieve a perfect symmetry. Is he really your son, do you think?
Have you the slightest evidence to support that monstrous allegation?
Only the evidence of one's eyes. Take a good look at lunchtime, at your idea of the future.
Don't be ridiculous. I've looked at Edwin. I've seen the boy tearing round this very garden. I've bowled leg breaks to him down there on the edge of the paddock. At times, many times, I have felt bound to punish him, and I must say he has respected me for it. The matter is proved beyond reasonable doubt. All doubt is fanciful. The boy is every inch a Truscott.
If you think so.
What?
I said...
I heard what you said. I'm not deaf. What sort of answer is that, if you think so?
It's not meant to be an answer. More a comment.
Not evidence. Pure comment.
On your enormous complacency.
My...
You're so sure of everything, aren't you, Fenimore? I've sat in this garden now ever since you moved to Gallows Corner, or at your dinner table, or at lunch, and I've been deafened by your appalling lack of doubt on every subject. Capital punishment, corporal punishment, how to make marmalade. Everything appears perfectly simple to you, doesn't it? God is simply a senior judge in the Court of Appeal. Death is merely a promotion to immortality. Geraniums are perfectly simple to manage if you don't mollycoddle them. And I, your next-door neighbour, I have to stand in, now that they've retired you at long, long last, for all those unfortunate criminals you miss so badly. I might refuse to visit you again. I'm tired of standing in the dock at Gallows Corner.
Never visit us and not see Margaret.
And not see either of you. It's been a life's work keeping you both amused.
Do you suppose I find you amusing?
Oh, of course. My pots, my bow ties, my alleged loose living. They keep you constantly entertained, don't they? And the fact that Maggie and I possibly had a relationship.
Relationship? What sort of mealy-mouthed expression is that? Is that the word nice girls in smocks who hand-paint egg cups use when they rot? Why don't you say Roger, like everybody else?
Because you're the only person I've ever heard say it.
Have you Rogered her? That is the question I've long had before me.
Well, have you come to a final judgment?
Oh, yes.
And the verdict is guilty, I suppose. It usually is.
I have directed myself as to reasonable doubt. But doubt is, in most cases, a form of cowardice. And now I have the painful duty of passing judgment.
Why painful? Passing judgment's as natural to you as passing water.
In a shifting world, Marshbanks, in a bog of unreliable evidence, there is usually one hard fact, one stepping stone of undisputed truth, and that is, I am Edwin's father.
The complacency of your legal decisions.
Whatever you may or may not have done, and I make no finding as to your activities, save that they were furtive, devious, and no doubt deeply embarrassing to the lady upon whom you inflicted your attentions, the paternity of Edwin is beyond dispute. How could it be otherwise?
I thought you had an idea how it might be.
The idea is laughable. As you pass through life, Marchbanks, you may have noticed you make very little impression on the universe. I could scarcely hear your step from the gravel. As you cross the lawn, I never see footprints, even when the grass is frosted. You are a drop in the ocean, Marshbanks, a puff in the wind.
Sir, what are you worrying about?
I'm not worrying in the least. When I look at Edwin, I have no doubts, no doubts, whatever.
It's a good many years since you looked at him.
When I look at Edwin, I feel I have every reason to be proud of my boy.
It takes very little, you know.
What?
One small spermatozoon. All the rest, the thousands of wasted organisms, might be described, this is as I understand it, as part of nature's bombast, her taste for wild exaggeration.
Do you wish to reopen the possibility?
Not a possibility, Millard. To me, it is a certainty.
What?
Why do you think I'm here for lunch?
To down my sherry, of course. To hack away at my vintage claret and gobble my duck. You know what Margaret and I call you? Second helping Marshbanks. Oh, behind your back, of course. Second helping.
I came here to see my boy.
My boy. I simply... don't follow
it. Come off it, then. Could you produce a boy that knelt on a church floor, carefully tracing the shapes of dead crusaders? A boy who sat at an easel on a summer evening, painting the reflections in a reservoir? Could the fruit of your old legal loins write poetry, or stand beside me at the kiln when the shapes emerged in their perfection, stare breathlessly at the simplicity of art?
You had my Edwin with you when you were cooking up chamber pots.
Oh, often on his holidays, my Edwin came over. He'd stay for tea, and his mother would join us, and we all played La Bohème, Caruso on the old 78s.
Well, where was I?
Hard at work, I imagine, imprisoning people.
I cannot possibly accept this so-called evidence.
Your wife was there when Edwin spanned the wheel and made a little mug to take back to school with him. Look at the boy's hand, she'd say. He has the long, artistic fingers like his father. Oh, don't look at your hands, Penny. short, stubby fingers, yours, fit for pointing out stab wounds on police photographs.
For the moment, I suggest we say nothing that would embarrass Margaret.
Embarrass her?
As for you, Marshbanks,
prisoner at the bar,
I shall deal with you later.
Boys!
Is that Margaret?
Of course it's Margaret.
Well, who's that with her in the conservatory? Can't you see someone? Some shape. Oh, they're coming out now.
They're sitting there, gossiping, 19 to the dozen, under the old mulberry. Heaven knows how they find so much to talk about. Edwin's here.
My son.
My boy, young Edwin.
Well, there you are then, Edwin. How are you, my boy? Edwin's gone.
Yes. The limo came for him.
The what?
The limousine. Back to Global House.
Yes. Edwin's gone.
Straight back to London. It seems he's got a meeting.
Which is top priority.
And which he can't afford to miss. Time's money, says Edwin.
Don't you agree?
Not money any longer. Time seems to be our dwindling ability to remain alive.
Well, at long last, and after all these years, Edwin has been to luncheon. An opportunity to get to know the boy.
Not much of an opportunity.
Hmm? Oh, I don't mean long to get to know the ins and outs of a fellow. In my line of business, one gets used to sizing up a witness fairly quickly. One forms an impression.
Of course, he's been a long time in Canada. You must make every allowance for that.
Oh, it was good to see the boy again.
And he didn't make much of an inroad on your sherry.
You noticed that? I also noticed it.
I think we all noticed it.
He rejected the Amontillado.
He asked if we had any juice.
You noticed that, too, did you?
Is there a packet of juice, he said, in the ice box?
I was not perfectly clear what the boy was driving at.
Margaret knew. She told him that the milkman does day-glow orange drink, but we hadn't any.
I told him that the Amontillado was juice. Juice of the grape cunningly qualified. But he was having none of it. And none of the claret at lunch, either.
It seems that Edwin has seen too many people with alcohol-related problems among the young executives in middle management.
I used to give Edwin wine for every birthday. On his 10th, as I remember it, I gave him 4 dozen of the Pichon Longueville.
Drinking at the age of 10.
No, for laying down and not for immediate drinking. When he was 11, I laid down 5 cases of the Cantenac Bechamel.
We made a few inroads on the cellar since then.
Oh, not too many inroads. We've saved a great deal for the boy. Now it seems we've saved it for ourselves. He hardly touched his roast duck. Did you notice that? Edwin hardly pecked at a drumstick.
Cholesterol. He said he'd seen too much of that in business.
He produced the same reason for doing such poor justice to the Logan Berry Pie and for giving the cold shoulder to our cream boat.
He said he'd seen too many young executives go through the same thing.
Through Logan Berry Pie?
No. Open heart surgery.
Oh, really? I've tackled Logan Berry Pie regularly, man and boy, for a good many years.
And your heart has remained as closed as ever.
I have never been scared of a carving of duck.
Of course, Edwin said he'd had a good breakfast. He told us that he'll always start the day with a dish of breakfast cereal. Don't you remember Edwin telling us that, Fenimore?
Cereal? Is that those small segments of baked cardboard that come in packets? Cereal, it seems, is another thing Edwin has taken to since he's been away from us.
Of course, he explained he doesn't really have time for anything else in the mornings. He's always in a heck of a hurry getting to Global Computers.
The company.
He hasn't been doing much log cabining, has he? Not much running wild, as you suggested. He spent 10 years in the global office in Toronto, rising to the executive floor by sheer damned will to succeed.
And I'll tell you something else. Edwin has absolutely no recollection of ever having rubbed a single brass. Not even when he was of tender years. He simply gave no support to your evidence of artistic leanings. It also seems he never wrote poetry on the subject of the wind. And he couldn't even remember you playing that damn ditty on your wind-up gramophone.
Odd that he couldn't remember you bowling leg breaks to him either down on the edge of the paddock. He never seems to have hit a six into the apple trees. Couldn't remember a single one of your notable murders.
I asked him what he did remember. Well, in fairness, I thought I was bound to put the question.
He just remembered lying on his bed all the afternoon doing algebra.
He said the three of us were always talking together. It seems he preferred mathematics to our company. Of course, I did notice that as a boy, Edwin was not always with us. I thought he was behind a shrubbery somewhere, playing pirates.
In fact, he was doing sums.
Training himself for his professional life.
His intimate knowledge of computers.
Did it occur to you that Edwin has a somewhat exaggerated respect for those no doubt useful little gadgets?
He told you the law needed one of his global machines. Put all the facts in and get the appropriate sentence out. That's what Edwin told you. Perhaps he's discovered how to dispense with judges.
No doubt, Marshbanks. A computer could also, without too much of an effort, manufacture your peasant-style jerrys. Perhaps you're due to be phased out completely.
The sentences you gave, said Edwin, were influenced by the amount of port you drank the night before, or whether you'd quarrelled with Mother, or if Haversack peed on the carpet. They could have replaced you years ago, Fenimore, with a decent calculating machine. Shh. Here comes Margaret.
Oh, of course, you're very quick to spot her.
Margaret's come out to join us in the garden.
Edwin's gone?
Yes.
It's a bit rum, isn't it, his not having come to see us for all these years?
Oh, he came to see us.
What?
He came to England quite often in the autumn. But that's the time you like to go to Dieppe. You both used to like it there, in the autumn.
So we missed Edwin?
Yes, we missed him.
Well, you can't go to Dieppe in August, gives you sunstroke. So we missed Edwin.
Well, yes.
Now, he's gone.
He was talking to me just now. He dried for me in the kitchen.
Before the limo came for him?
Yes. He was very helpful in that way. He dried for me.
Handle a deft tea towel, does Edwin?
And he was saying that he'd avoided marriage for a good many years.
He told us that at lunch. He said he'd seen too many young executives with marriage problems. It affected them, he told us, just when they should be maximizing their input for the company. Marriage, Edwin thinks, is one of the chief reasons for divorce.
It also leads to crime. That's been my experience after a good many years on the bench.
Well, Edwin seems to have high hopes for his marriage with Arlene.
Arlene? Whoever's Arlene?
Arlene Jackson, daughter of the vice president in charge of media promotion.
He never told us about Arlene.
Perhaps he thought it was something more suitable for his mother to deal with.
And, of course, they're getting this house together.
Who are?
Edwin and Arlene.
Oh, they'll need one if they're getting married. For entertaining. I don't know what Marchbanks here would have done without our matrimonial home. Oh, he'd have been hard put to it to know where to turn for a free luncheon.
It seems Edwin has been put in charge of the Californian office. They've got a big house on the beach. Edwin says life is very easy there. The marketing is so simple.
Marketing? Yes,
you just drive in and park behind the supermarket and someone will carry it out for you. And it's never cold. The weather's the same every day in California. On the coast, as they call it. Except for a little fog, occasionally. Edwin thinks this place is too big for us. The garden's too much to keep up, he thinks. And Catterbowl's getting too old to cope with it. And one other thing.
What other thing?
He thinks you two quarrel too much.
Quarrel?
You and Tom quarrel. Edwin says it's not a happy atmosphere. He's worried about me as his mother.
Well, of course we quarrel.
Isn't that what neighbours are for?
Edwin finds it strange that you quarrel so much and then go on holiday together.
So does Edwin offer any solution to this allegedly puzzling situation?
Edwin recommends a change.
For all of us?
It would amount to that. Edwin wanted me to tell you his idea. He thought that might be better.
Edwin has an idea, has he? A wheeze. This is something brilliant.
And of course it would mean putting Gallows Corner on the market.
Gallows Corner to be sold? Less than brilliant.
What Edwin said was, he felt he has to get nearer to us. That was it. He wanted to come much closer.
Aren't we too old for that?
He said all this whilst doing the washing up.
He feels that he owes it to us to look after us in our old age.
He'll look after you, Fenimore. He'll probably put you on a diet, just juice and wheat germ.
However serious the situation, Marchbanks can be relied on to say something entirely trivial.
Oh, you'll lose weight on the coast, won't you? You'll leave your stomach in San Francisco.
He wanted you to consider it carefully.
Consider what, exactly?
Edwin says there's plenty of room in their new home on the coast.
Plenty of room for what?
For his father and mother, of course.
The coast of what was it again?
The coast of America. Edwin wants his father to live there too, with me and him.
And Arlene.
And Arlene, of course.
He distinctly said he wanted his father to join the happy couple on the coast. That is your clear recollection.
I promised I'd ask you to think about it.
Well, doesn't that pose rather a question?
Yes.
You know, Marchbanks, I've been thinking about young Edwin ever since he left us this afternoon.
It's getting cold in the garden. Shouldn't we be going indoors?
Edwin wishes his father to join him on the coast. Is that the simple point at issue, Margaret?
Yes. I'm going indoors to put a kettle on. We'll have to light a log fire this evening. Why don't you come in? You've both sat out past any sensible time for sitting.
Oh, presently, Margaret. We'll be in for tea presently.
Well, do be careful. It's cold when the sun goes down. even for geraniums. I'll tell you when tea's ready.
I am reminded of a number of different pieces of evidence, unimportant in themselves perhaps, but fitted together they add up to an unanswerable case.
Oh, dear. Are we to have another case?
A short one, only. And one of which the result may be not unwelcome to you.
You mean I'm not to be condemned to death?
Oh, eventually, of course, but not perhaps today.
Well, then, let's hear it.
I would start by reminding you, members of the jury, I am sure you will remember the evidence, considering the attention you have clearly been paying throughout this unfortunate case. Edwin takes breakfast cereal.
Your Edwin.
Edwin, I repeat, ingests some prepackaged preparation on rising. He is also, as it has been admitted, an addict of juice. When faced with a drumstick, he babbles of cholesterol. When offered a healthy glass of claret, which can only have the effect of raising the spirits and keeping the bowels regular, he is visited by dark thoughts of loss of employment and alcoholism. How would you describe a fellow, Marshbanks, who puts off marriage? As you have done.
Sensible.
Sensible? Or would you say artistic? A vegetarian, an addict of free love and knickerbockers. Just the sort to indulge himself in watercolors and brass rubbings. A pale and unhealthy youth, if I may charge my recollection, who, when the other lads were playing pirates in the orchard, lay upon his bed doing quadratic equations.
Other lads.
An underminer of married life. Witness his determined attempt to sell up Gallows Corner.
Not a sound scheme, that of Edwin's.
Almost as bad, would you say, as haunting conservatories when a husband's back is turned? As creeping around with a handful of eggs, whistling tender moments from the repertoire of Italian caterwaulers? If you ask my opinion, Edwin is a chip off the old block.
A what?
Like father, like son. Blood may be thicker than water, even though in the case of the Marshbeck family, it emerges in the form of juice.
My family?
Oh, chuck it, Marshbanks, it's clear as mud. He couldn't be mine. Edwin is your boy.
My?
Your son. The fruit of your loins. I suppose, given the somewhat spare and skinny nature of the loins in question, the fruit is as sour and meagre as might be expected.
My son. Now look here, Fenimore.
Your Biblo. Your little bit of the wrong side of the blanket. A potter's bastard spawned from a quick clutch in the conservatory. A hasty embrace behind the aspidistras. If anyone has to go and live on the coast, it should be you.
I begin to see what's happening. A miscarriage of justice. Oh, no. You go, Fenimore. It's your responsibility.
As you hinted, Edwin is a sensitive plant. Takes after his father. Of course he wrote to you from Lawnhurst. What did you send your sprig, Marshbanks? A hot water bottle and a couple of chest protectors?
Edwin, if you want my opinion, has not got the soul of an artist.
But he has got the artist's infallible instinct for winkling respectable people out of their homes.
What artist has ever been known to lie on his bed doing quadratic equations?
Suppose you tell me. Wasn't the poet Shelley a bit of a one for the higher mathematics?
The poet Shelley, you can take it from me, Fenimore, had never even heard of algebra.
You sure?
The main characteristic of young Edwin...
Not so young.
The main characteristic of young Edwin, I would say, is his grasp of business matters, his lack of imagination, the plodding, not to say pedantic, manner in which he expresses himself. In any conceivable cricket team of crashing bores, Your Edwin would undoubtedly be first into battle.
My Edwin? Oh, do be careful, Marchbanks. Are you by any chance implying that this Edwin person is my Edwin?
With a bore of that magnitude, there's bound to be a lawyer in his pedigree. Besides, Edwin could never be anything as interesting as a bastard. That young man was conceived with the utmost respectability. One night, perhaps, when you had become overexcited by a day spent imposing deterrent sentences, and Maggie closed her eyes and hummed Puccini to herself.
Be careful.
What will you get me for? Contempt of court?
Could I have sired a son who rejects such a wine as the Pichon Longueville?
Oh, easily. You believe in character building, don't you? In self-discipline, free will, and taking the tough decision. Well, your boy Edwin has just disciplined himself out of a decent wine. Anyway, he looks like you.
Looks like me? Put him up to the light and you could see through him.
Before you grew that stomach and your nose went purple, he's the spitting image.
Of you, Marshbanks. Put a spotted bow tie round that boy's neck and he'd look every inch a potter.
A lawyer, Fenimore. Every inch a lawyer.
Nonsense.
A development, of course, since your vintage. Edwin is Le Truscott Nouveau, a fresh and impertinent young wine with a greatly increased boring factor.
Not a Truscott Nouveau or anything else.
Edwin is your gift to the future, Fenimore. The man who makes his decisions with a machine, with no small error of mercy possible.
He's a bloody vegetarian brass rubber.
Rubbish. Anyway, I'm not a vegetarian.
You're a duck-gobbling, poultry-eating vegetarian.
There is only one thing to be said for Edwin. He is clearly not my responsibility.
Oh, nothing's your responsibility, is it? That's what's wrong with you, Mushbacks. Oh, I've heard it in court 1,000 times. I don't know what made me do it, my lad. You know quite well what made you do it. A taste for rogering married ladies. And now you must simply face up to the appalling consequences of your actions.
Is that Maggie up there in the conservatory?
A brief spasm of so-called delight and a lifetime of Edwin to look forward to. And given his ridiculous anxiety to remain alive, he'll probably reach 90.
Is there someone up there in the conservatory with Maggie?
Well, it couldn't be Edwin.
Edwin left to go back to London.
To go back to Global Computers.
She must be alone then. It was the shape, the shadows on that green glass that were confusing.
Still out here chatting. Whatever do you two find to talk about?
Something about which we would like your honest opinion. Sit down for a moment.
I put the tea tray in the drawing room. I bought ginger biscuits. But Edwin's gone.
Ginger biscuits can wait. Please make yourself comfortable, madam.
Fenimore.
It's no good, Marshbanks. We can't live forever in a state of suspended speculation. The time has come when a decision has to be reached, however painful.
What is it now? Has Haversack been digging in the flower beds again?
No, Maggie. It's not Haversack.
I'm afraid the issues raised here are rather more serious.
More serious than Haversack digging in the new rose? There's a last little splash of sunshine. I will sit down with you. Just for a few minutes.
I will now call Lady Margaret Truscott.
I'm here, Fenimore. You don't have to call me.
I had hoped to deal with this matter without troubling you to give evidence, without your having to recall facts of a no doubt painful and embarrassing nature.
And for supper, I thought cold cuts on a tray in front of the fire.
Madam, the allegations that have been brought against me personally are of such a grave nature that the matter must be cleared up now, before any adjournment is granted.
I know no law. I really cannot join in your games. And the tea is stewing. Shan't we all go in?
Until my name is cleared, we do not go in.
What is it, Tom? Do you understand him?
Oh, yes, Maggie. I do understand.
I leave aside the questionable behavior of the man, Marshbanks. I pass no judgment on whether or not, and in what precise circumstances, you were rogered by him.
Oh, Fenn, dear. Not that again.
The present position is far more serious. The charge is that I fathered the person Edwin. That I, Sir Fenimore Truscott, QC, one of Her Majesty's judges of the Queen's Bench, retired and put out to grass, did maliciously burden the future with the said person, thereby diminishing to that extent the quality of life on earth.
Tell him, Maggie, who was Edwin's father?
Do you wish it were you, Tom?
No, quite honestly.
Neither of you wants him. Oh, come on, you boys. Let's go indoors.
Not until you have answered my question.
How can I make you understand?
I propose to call Lady Margaret Truscott. I assume the witness wishes to affirm.
Affirm what?
I assume that she, being of the red persuasion, wishes to swear to the truth in some mealy-mouthed, secular fashion.
I don't know why I should have the responsibility.
What we want to know, quite simply, Maggie, is which of us...
Which of us is responsible for what I suppose might be called the younger generation, who may or may not, in the course of time, inherit our bits and pieces. Ugh, to me... Edwin has the distinct smell of a Marshbanks to him.
To me, he is all Truscott.
Edwin, my son.
On that issue, there can be no room for doubt, I imagine.
Edwin wants you to go out there, Maggie.
He meant it well, I'm sure, when he invited me.
What did you say? I mean, what were your feelings exactly?
Oh, I told him I couldn't go. I had to get the geraniums in. On the coast, it seems, the geraniums may stay out all the year round. Well, I said, that doesn't leave much for a gardener to do.
What did Edwin say to that?
Geraniums, he told me, are not everything. The future is out there on the coast, he said. Oh, quite honestly, Edwin can't find the future here.
Can he not? What have you done with the future, then?
You're not going with him, are you, Margaret?
If I thought of it, I'd have to talk the matter over with Edwin's father.
But you've done that, Maggie.
No, I don't think I could. It would cause embarrassment. I'm not sure his wife would like it.
His wife?
Well, I'm not quite catching the drift of this evidence.
Edwin talks about the future. Well, I certainly wasn't thinking about the future. Not that summer before the year when Edwin was born.
A good summer, as I remember, particularly in the soft fruit department.
Every day, starting with the sun melting the mist over the herbaceous borders. It seems to me, looking back on it, a time of love.
Quite clearly of love. Among other crimes.
Go on, Maggie, go on.
I loved you, Tom, because you were so strong and independent. Tough as old boots, caring about your pots. And the rest of the world could go hang as far as you were concerned.
Tom, strong? I can't say that I follow the drift of this evidence.
And you, Fenn. Because of that ridiculous vulnerability.
Well, perhaps, madam, you're not feeling quite yourself.
You cared so desperately about what people thought. You wanted to please everyone.
Everyone?
The police officers and the jury. I used to see you in court trying to seduce the jury. I think you even tried to flatter the criminals by pretending their little crimes were so desperately important.
She's caught you neatly, Fenn.
I hope we may be coming to a less frivolous part of the evidence.
Come in. You will love someone. You will love the way they Pinner Potter's wheel with such outrageous confidence, or go to work at the law courts each morning, trembling with fear and trying to put a ridiculously brave face on it. And you may love the way someone prunes roses, stooping so easily, or weeds the strawberry bed all day in the hot sunshine, with a dark stain of sweat growing on the back of his shirt.
I'm lost. Do you prune roses, Fenimore?
No, neither do you. It's a job we always leave to the catamole. Catamole's the expert.
Catamole.
But just because you love someone? Just because one summer... I can't see that I'm responsible.
And wasn't it Catamole who more often than not weeded the strawberry bed?
Just because I may have laid myself down from time to time that summer.
In the conservatory?
Oh, the orchard, the conservatory. I can't remember everything.
So try, madam. Do your best to charge your recollection.
What I mean...
Yes, madam, tell us exactly what you do mean, so that we may note it down.
I mean, just because you fancy the way a man stands patiently pricking out seed boxes, that doesn't make you responsible, does it, for the future?
What are you trying to tell us, Maggie?
To tell you... Don't both look so solemn. How could we have run this great place without Catamore to help us out? I'm going now. Up to the house. I'm cold. And I really can't tell you any more about it.
She's gone.
Up to the house.
Into the conservatory.
Can you see her? Oh, we really must get that glass cleaned. Now I can see her. I can see a shape.
One shape, Venema. That's all you can see.
Yes, I think so. I honestly think so. What was... Margaret saying about our jobbing gardener, a catamole. I'm not entirely sure that I got the drift of her evidence.
Are you not, Fenimore? Are you really not sure?
Yes, I suppose I am sure. Well, the sun's dropped down behind the herbaceous border. Time to go in?
Well, yes, I suppose it is.
You'll stay for supper, won't you, Marshbanks?
You really want me?
Second helping, Marshbanks? The unfortunate fact is, I'm not sure we can do without you. Well, there's one thing to be thankful for. Edwin has left us a bottle or two. Shall we have time, I wonder, to get through it all?
Edwin. What do you think, honestly? Is Edwin the future?
Not our future, Tom. Yes, thank God for it. Not ours.
Emlyn Williams played Sir Fenimore Truscott, QC, Michael Gough, Thomas Marshbanks, and Sylvia Coleridge, Margaret, in Edwin by John Mortimer. The director was John Tideman.